I love the colorful clothes you wear, and the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of a gentle mood on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitation.
Hello, I'm Solazar, and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Tools for Transformation, right here on Radio Monterey. Now, quantum physics tells us that we are all energy vibrating at different frequencies, and in Good Vibrations Radio, we bring you information that allows you to change the vibrational frequency of your life. We are your source for everyday alchemy, so you can take the lead in your life and turn it into gold. Good Vibrations Radio is made possible through the sponsorship of Magic for Life, which is the owner-operator of Radio Monterey, bringing you information unfiltered, uncensored by the corporate media. Visit RadioMonterey.com. Take a look at the shows and the hosts. As a matter of fact, take a look at our brand new video on the homepage, which I'm just tickled with. But take a look at the shows and the hosts and get the information that allows you to be more informed in your life. In addition, Magic for Life is also the promoter-producer of the Rhoda Psychic Fair. Now, for 33 years, the Rhoda Psychic Fair has been providing the best spirituality metaphysical event here in the Monterey County and Santa Cruz areas. It's coming back to the Monterey Fairgrounds October 29th and 30th. It's our annual event, and go to rhodapsychicfair.com so you can be on the email list to be notified of the other upcoming events as well. But October 29th and 30th, it was right around the corner of Halloween and Samhain and All Saints Day and All Souls Day. It's the time when the veils between the worlds are thin, and that means it's time to have some fun. Come in costume. Come as who you might have been. Come as who you might become. Come as who you are. But any way you do it, make sure you come October 29th and 30th to the Monterey Fairgrounds. Well, as most of you know, I love me some Day by Day with James Allen. Now, in 1903, James Allen wrote his essay, As a Man Thinketh. And he took the title from chapter 23, verse 7 of Proverbs, which says, As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. James Allen wanted us to know that we are today in our present reality a direct outcome of our past thoughts and actions. But our past thoughts and actions don't predict our future. Every day we have a new opportunity to create a new future by the thoughts and actions and beliefs we implant in ourselves each day. And in Day by Day with James Allen, James Allen's words have been carved out so there's a little bit for each day of the month to make it a little easier to digest. So today, for the 14th day of June, James Allen tells us about harmonizing thoughts. A person is the causer, though nearly always unconsciously, of his circumstances. And that whilst aiming at the good end, he is continually frustrating its accomplishment by encouraging thoughts and desires which cannot possibly harmonize with that end. Essentially, what is he saying? We implant a thought or an intention. And then we implant a thought or intention that says, well, maybe I can't do that. Or maybe that won't happen. Or if I try that, perhaps this will happen. It's a lot like the person who went to the concert pianist after the concert and said, you know, I would give anything to be able to play like you. And the pianist looked at him and said, obviously not. Because if he would give anything to be able to play like him, he would be playing like him. So ask yourself, what have you prevented yourself from being able to do? What have you run around most of your life saying, if only, I wish I could? And then ask yourself, what have you put in front of that to keep yourself from doing it? Any thought, any action, any step. Go ahead and remember that the thought is, I can do it. A harmonizing thought is that a person is a causer, though nearly always unconsciously, of his circumstances, and that whilst aiming at a good end, he is continually frustrating its accomplishment by encouraging thoughts and desires which cannot possibly harmonize with that end. The minute we say we can't, we can't. The minute we say we can as long as we keep that focus. And as a reminder from today's Daily Word, it says, I respect all beings as unique expressions of the divine. Remember what Pierre de Chardin told us? We are all spiritual beings having a physical experience. We are all born with that divine light inside of us, although we spend a lot of our life looking outside for that divinity. If we allow ourselves to be the best expression of our own divinity and bring our light out, then we become the best expression of the divine. Just like James Allen says, that's a choice we make. We make it in every moment. We make it every day. And allow yourself to be the best expression of who you are as the divine being you already are. I'm going to touch very quickly on some of the astrological influences that are confronting us this week, because we have many things going on that are powerful. Now, as you know, we still have three planets sitting very clearly in retrograde. We have our planet of Mars in Scorpio. It's going to be retrograde through the 29th of June. So again, that's our planet of aggression and getting out there and assertion. And while he's retrograde, he's kind of holding us back a little bit. But at the same time, while he's retrograde, he's asking us to take a look at anything we've procrastinated on or held off and make sure we take some steps in that direction. But when he comes direct in Scorpio, it's going to be a little bit of an explosion. And we'll talk more about that next week. And then we still have Pluto, the ruler of rebirth and transformation, lord of karma and dharma, who's sitting there in Capricorn retrograde until September 26th. And so Pluto doesn't wait to call a meeting when he wants to get something done. He essentially does it. So right now, inside us, Pluto is asking us the questions at all times. Are you taking the actions on the things that you want to take actions on? Are you ready to really make the changes you want to make in your life? Are you going to be okay when I bring those changes into your door and they come marching into your house? Because if you're not okay, it's going to be more disruption. In essence, Pluto makes the changes that Pluto wants without waiting for permission. And then, of course, we have Saturn, our planet of discipline and commitment and hard work. And he's sitting there retrograde in Sagittarius until August 13th. Now, Sagittarius is a lot like the foreman walking around, making sure your foundation is strong and everything is solid in your life. So right now, Sagittarius is saying, how are you sitting financially? Where are you spending your money? Where is your income coming from? How is your house? You know, how is your car? How is your health? How is your foundational elements of what Maslow might call your basic hierarchy of needs at the physical and security level? How do those things look? Because it's time to shore them up. It's time to solidify them. Stop spending where you're spending. Take in more, save more. Take a look at what you're eating, what you're sleeping, where you're living, how you're driving, what you're doing. Saturn wants you to take a look at all that and say, where can I add some extra stability and strength in my life at this time? And then yesterday we had the big deal. The big deal was Neptune going retrograde. Now, before I touch on the Neptune retrograde, I'm going to jump backwards to Sunday a little bit when Mercury went into Gemini. Now, we know we're in the Gemini Sun period, but Mercury, the planet who rules Gemini, came home to roost. And as we know, Mercury is that planet of communication. And Gemini, as we know, is a little bit of attention deficit because it likes to jump around and flit around and go from this and that and the other thing. So we may find our attention a little less focused during this period. You know, Gemini loves to spread knowledge and thoughts. After all, you know, it's an air sign. But it's more about short presentations. It's more about, it's a good time to apply for a job, to socialize, to learn new things that you find interesting. It's a good time to be entertaining. It's a good time to have fun. It's not a good time to get in-depth about anything in your life. This is not the time to sit down with your partner and say, let's have that conversation about our relationship we've been holding off for the last 5 years. Not a good time. Wait for Gemini, Mercury to move on and get out of Gemini. This is also the time when we may find ourselves so terribly entertaining that we're talking about all the things we know nothing about. So when somebody challenges us, we may feel a little ego bruised because we really don't have a foundation below it besides our immediately brilliant thought that Mercury and Gemini gave us. So try to research subjects if you're going to be talking about it. It's a good time to meet new people, try new things, and it's going to be a very energetic time. Don't make promises you can't keep, and don't make promises about things you don't understand. Make sure you're clear before you say, yeah, I'm going to do that, or yes, let's do that. Stick with what's real about you. Stick with your true capabilities. And then yesterday, as I've started to mention, Neptune went retrograde. So now we have four planets retrograde. So we have Neptune, you know, again, which is our planet of altruism, compassion, mystery, illusion, mysticism, artistic creativity, and it went retrograde. And as we know, retrograde, it turns that energy inward. In addition, Neptune is in the sign it rules, Pisces. And this is the last of the 12 signs of the 12 house zodiac. And it contains the energy of all the signs that preceded it, plus that extra energy of mysticism and spirituality. So this energy is already internal even before the retrograde. So this adds a whole nother level to the retrograde energy coming in. So we're going to expect to feel a little torn about issues that are presented to us because we're going to be reviewing everything to make sure we don't make a mistake. It's going to be kind of an angst-filled period. Now, Neptune's going to stay retrograde right through November. So it's going to be a long period of time. And this is not going to be a painful period for us. I just want to be clear about that. But it will be an angst-filled period for us because we're going to think about these things. We're going to think about the things we haven't even wanted to think about. So just expect that. We're going to feel as if everything is moving backwards during this retrograde period. We should expect to feel torn about the issues of love and romance, our life and career directions, those areas of our life that we're working on to heal. If we're working on ourselves emotionally or physically, we're going to find ourselves a little torn about how to approach that, how to fix that, how to resolve it. So we expect that to be a natural outcome of this retrograde. In addition, we're more likely to think about what we need to do in those areas than doing anything. It's going to be more about focusing on it. It's not a good time to volunteer or take on new projects or do the next big task or anything else or the task we've been holding off that's so big. It's a small step period, not big steps, small step period. Make sure that we're doing the small steps. Don't hold everything off and wait for Neptune to get out of the retrograde. That's ridiculous. Nothing big, nothing life-changing or earth-shattering. Don't write your bestseller right now because it's not a good time to take that leap. When something new presents itself, it's better to let it sit before taking action. Look at it again. If it still feels and looks sound, move forward. Otherwise, put it back in the pot to let it marinate a little bit more. It's a good time. It's a time of internal conflicts, and that's good since it leads us to examine all sides of an issue. When we commit, it will stick because we'll automatically have reviewed everything anyway. So this is a good time. It's not a bad time. It's just a very reflective period. So that really leads us up to what's going to occur later in the week, and we'll talk about that some more tomorrow and Thursday. But that brings us right up to where we are today with our guest. Gina Ross is a founder and president of International Trauma Healing Institutes in the United States and in Israel, and also the co-founder of the Israeli Trauma Center at Herzog Hospital in Jerusalem. She's an internationally known expert on the impact of trauma in conflict between groups or nations, and she's specialized in cutting-edge healing methods that can be brought to the public. As a pioneer in understanding collective trauma, she's integrated her wide expertise in cross-cultural issues and relationships and is currently working with Israeli and Palestinian societies and other groups to bring an understanding of the role of trauma in conflicts between groups and nations. Let's go ahead and welcome to Good Vibrations Radio, Gina Ross. Gina, thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure being here with you.
Well, this is an extensive position that you have. It's also an interesting position to me from the point of the depth of understanding that's really required to do this. So as an introductory issue, can you tell us what led you into the study of trauma, and then what led you into this very this big area of bridging trauma between Israelis and Palestinians?
Yes, quite a complicated question, but well, first, maybe if you know about me personally, my personal history, I think, must have something to do with it, although I didn't become aware of it until later, where I was born in Syria, and we ran away when I was 5 months old overnight. We were the last plane to leave before they stopped the Jews from leaving for the next 15 years. And then again, we went to Lebanon, and again at Lebanon, when I was 11, we had to run away overnight when the civil trouble started, and we were the last plane to leave before the American troops arrived at the airport. So it seems to me, although I wasn't aware that that was behind it all, it seems to me that my own history made me aware of the different ways that people think, the different situations in different countries and different cultures. I lived in eight different countries on four different continents. I speak seven languages. I traveled very extensively around the world, and I was being a therapist and an artist, and I was just tranquil with my own little life. And then I realized that if I wanted people to become spiritual and connected with God, that actually trauma was a big obstacle to that. And I didn't move to look at trauma until I realized that. My own life was very pleasant. I traveled everywhere. I had a lot of friends, very mixed backgrounds, had a very wonderful, easy life, children, husband, lots of family everywhere around the world. So I didn't feel the trauma in my own body. But when I started working with my clients, I realized, and when I was reading about it, I realized that if we stay traumatized after we go through traumatic events, then it cuts the connection with ourselves, with other people, with our bodies, and also with our connection with the divine. And that's where I thought if I wanted a more spiritual world, we really had to tackle the issue of trauma. That's how it started.
Well, let me back up then from this part of my question and go in a different direction. It seems to me, even though we can talk about the issues between Israelis and Palestinians, which are very big, but it seems to me that most people are carrying some level of trauma and may be unaware. And the trauma is different. For instance, I believe in the United States that this is a country that's very traumatized, not necessarily through the same type of trauma that the Israelis and Palestinians have encountered, but certainly from the fact of that we don't do a good job of dealing in the present and in the moment with those traumatic incidents that occur either remotely, such as what happened in Orlando, or what happened in 9/11, or personally by what happens to us in our own families or events. Would you agree that most of us are really traumatized and unaware of what's going on in our life as a result of that?
Well, here's what I would say. I mean, first of all, you're right that trauma is very ubiquitous. Like everybody's life is going to go through some kind of traumatic event, right?
Yes.
And we add to it right now secondhand trauma from the media. We add to it, I think, what happened collectively with the United States in the Vietnam War, and then what happened with 9/11, and then what happened with the Iraq War. It kept adding up into people's consciousness at the collective level. But what you're also right is that at the individual level, we are all going through something. Now,
but you're fading away.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. The beauty of it is that we are designed to cope with trauma. We'll go through traumatic events, but only maybe 15 to 20% will be traumatized. But that does not mean that most of us are not walking around with what they call traumatic activation. We're still very highly functional. We can do everything in our lives. But there are areas where we're not meeting our potential. There are areas where we are blocked or stuck or just being destructive even in some of the areas in our lives. And yes, most people don't realize, although many people do, that it's related to trauma. Because one thing about trauma is that feeling bad feels right. You do not imagine that because something happened, you can feel better than this. There wasn't the concept that you could heal from something bad that happened to you. It wasn't in the collective consciousness. So you're right, there are two elements. One is not everybody's aware that there are obstacles. You know, everything that you were saying was so beautiful before. All of those parts of us that are not finding their fulfillment can be very much related to traumatic activation that's still left in our system.
Mm-hmm.
Plus,
you mentioned also, I saw in looking over your website and looking over your material, that you also deal with first responders, you deal with medical personnel, you have a variety of techniques, but you also deal with military about the PTSD. And from a collective awareness, there was no PTSD in United States consciousness before the Iraq War. You know, before that, the Vietnam veterans returning home were simply baby killers and ostracized. So their PTSD lay dormant for years.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
Manifested.
Lay dormant.
But so untreated.
Lay dormant.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, it was so untreated, and most people didn't realize why many of them ended up turning to drugs or alcohol or violence.
Right.
And it's because they had this internal trauma that they neither understood nor were able to get treatment for. And I think
exactly.
That goes to the psyche of what you're talking about of the world itself, is that when you talk about Israeli and Palestinians, or we talk about the trauma in the Middle East, what we're really talking about are people who are carrying internalized energy that they don't know how to release except through an expression of violence.
That's exactly it. And the violence is not always turned outwards, right? The violence can be turned inward in depression, in suicidal ideation, in destructive personal actions in one's personal life. It's a small minority that it actually becomes outwardly aggressive. Let's not forget that. However, when you think that pretty much 90% of the world population in the last century went through traumatic events, and today, because also of the media and secondhand trauma, we're all exposed to it, 15 to 20% is a huge number. And then even if you take 2, 3, 4% of that, that becomes violent, that's still a huge number. But it's important not to stigmatize trauma as necessarily everybody becoming violent. That's the only thing I want to make sure that stays clear for us about this. But yes, you're right. Trauma, as my doctor said, has become the middle name of all of us. It has become our middle name. And that's where, you know, about 20 years ago, I was studying everything around me that I could put my hands on, and I realized there were like about 10 to 15 short-term trauma therapy that just showed up out of nowhere. And I thought, well, what's going on here? And that's when I realized it was time to heal trauma globally. Those techniques were there to help us take care of what I call the collective nervous system.
Well, and that's a huge undertaking. Certainly, it's not a small initiative or intention. So what led you then to focus on, especially, it's not your sole focus, but to focus on creating a group to deal with the Israeli-Palestinian issues? Why did you choose to take that on? Because that's big.
Yeah, that's big. But I think the Ross model altogether is very big. It's even bigger in the sense, I'll explain both of them. The Ross model was recognizing that trauma was, if we wanted to heal trauma at national level, at mass level, we needed to enter all the institutions that either created trauma or were able to heal it or both. And so when I first wrote my first book for the media to help us heal trauma, that's when I realized all the other sectors that were part of the whole system that really interface with trauma one way or another. So that's how the Ross model started. And though it seems very, very, very big, at some level it's very containable too, because what we can do if each sector learned about trauma and how to heal it in its own sector, like that became part of the trainings of teachers, the training of clergy, the training of soldiers, the training of doctors, the training of nurses, then automatically it will become part of the lexicon of the public. It'll be in everybody's understanding and awareness. That was the idea. The reason why specifically the Palestinian-Israeli one, first of all, you know, I was born in the Middle East. I grew up in Lebanon. I spoke Arabic. My father spoke Arabic mostly. He learned some Portuguese in Brazil, but not a lot. He read in Arabic. And I needed to find a way to put all those parts of myself together. And also my people were in jeopardy. I'm Jewish, and I had moved to Israel for a few months when I was younger. And I was very aware of the threats that were on top of us, and I realized that a lot of the violence had to do with trauma, and my feeling was if we bring the understanding of trauma in the Middle East and its healing, then that could help diminish the violence. And then we realized now, all of us, that it's not about the Israeli-Palestinian problem anymore. It's really about a much, much bigger problem. It's a world problem where there's a lot of traumatized cultures, and, you know, the United States could be one of them too, that are taking actions in ways that are not constructive for themselves or for others. And I've, you know, my psyche was very marked by how was it possible that the Holocaust happened? Mm. You know, this was like in the middle of one of the most civilized places on earth. Well, how did that take place? And so when I start looking at those energies and how, you know, it's what you were saying, we're not looking at what's in front of us. We're not facing what's there. We know that something is amiss, but we're not taking responsibility for it. And that's when I realized, like, what's making people not take responsibility? Why do we go into denial? Why do we get scared? You know, why do we wait until the last minute when it's too late without, you know, undergoing a big damage to repair the situation? Whether at the personal level, the community level, or the collective level, it's the same thing. It's the same issue. It's like when we are traumatized, we are not at our best. When we're walking around with stress hormones freely flowing in our bodies, with this excess energy stuck in our bodies, we're not fully rational. We're not making the best of decisions. We're not being the most compassionate. We're not being the most flexible. We're just not at our best. We're not being according to the divine energy.
Yeah, it seems to me that, just my opinion, I want to remind folks real quickly that we're talking to Gina Ross, founder and president of International Trauma Healing Institutes in both the United States and Israel, and her website is ginaross.com. They can also go to the guest page of goodvibrationsradio.com to connect over through the link. But I wanted to say it strikes me that trauma obviously is a draining energy within us. When you said, for instance,
exactly.
Leads to a depression, it can lead to a depression and other things. But trauma is a very draining energy, but it is that insidious energy that sits there quietly biding its own time. And I think it makes us feel vulnerable and afraid. I also believe that's why when we see entities in the world, or even like in our latest in the U.S. and this latest political nonsense going on, where we see people who feed our fear and externalize it by saying, because when you talk about the Holocaust, that's exactly what it was. They were responsible. They've kept this from you. If you weren't doing as well, it's because of these people. If you're struggling to make a living, it's because this person. When we do that, I think we're allowing our trauma to be fed without being healed. That's just my opinion.
Well, definitely, it's going to. It is going to influence and affect decisions that we're taking, whether it's political or at the couples level or at the family level. Trauma is going to distort how we look at the world. Now, the thing about it, one of the discernment that I wanted to bring to all of this is to recognize what is healthy anger and toxic anger? What is healthy fear that alerts us that there's danger and toxic fear? Because there was actually a real fear that was happening around the Holocaust, and people didn't listen to it. They did not respond to their feeling of fears, and they let very bad things happen. So it's very important, I think, here to discern the difference between the two. And if I am not ready to listen to the arguments of the other side, if I demonize the other, then I know I'm in toxic field and I'm in toxic territory. If I'm able to recognize that there's something that's happening that's actually scary, because it's true, it's scary. You've got bombs exploding and you've got people doing terrorist acts and things are actually happening. And if I look at it and then I can still observe and study the situation without having to demonize anybody and to make room for what can be done in terms of healing, then I'm in healthy fear. Then I'm in healthy anger when I want to do something about something that's distorted.
But I think isn't that a tall order to put on all of us? So let me put it a different way. One of the things we talk about here all the time is that each person has to be able to take that responsibility and make the shift themselves. I think it's tremendously challenging for what you're doing to try to globally get groups and entities and people to make that shift. And it seems like some of your work is by starting at schools, is working through schools. It's working, as you said, you work with medical professionals and military and doctors and nurses and et cetera, first responders. But that's still a large thing. What can each individual who's listening, what could they do for themselves and maybe when they can see it in others? What could they do to help relieve their own trauma?
Yeah, that's a very excellent question. So one of the ways, for example, I always tell my students, okay, do you know when you start getting activated? Do you know when you start getting upset or fearful? What are the signs inside of you?
For me, it's usually when they're turning blue as my hands are on their throat. I can really tell I'm getting activated.
That is not a first sign. That is a last sign, right?
That's not
so
even true.
When you, of course not. But that would be the last sign. Listen, it's not true for you. It's true for many people, though, you know. And I have so many couples where the man all of a sudden says, I am so sorry. I realize what a bully I've been all the time. You know, they just did not know what was going on. They were breaking stuff and yelling and even hitting, and they were not aware of what was happening. So for a lot of people, that comes after the disaster, after the damage, the awareness. So it's to start developing the awareness, what we call the felt sense. How am I, what messages am I getting from the inside of my body? Okay, that was the one thing in terms of internal sensations in my body that alert me that something is going on. I'm not liking something. Somebody's getting me aggravated. I'm starting to become fearful. I'm mistrusting. I get the signs by maybe there's a lump in my throat, or my chest is getting tight, or my heart just sank, or the butterfly in my stomach. Something is happening in my body that's alerting me that something is going on that's not okay. All right? That's one thing. The other one is at the mental level, just all of us can look at that. If I'm polarized, if I am so angry that the other one is just the devil and everything is about his fault, if they disappear, the world will be just a great place, then I know that I'm in polarized territory and I'm in toxic fear instead of healthy fear. Remember, healthy fear is very important. It's not to be neglected. And sometimes we're so afraid of toxic fear that we abandon healthy fear. That's also not good. It's very important to understand that today, because there's a tendency to toxify everything, even truthful information. And that's not good for us either, because then we cannot prevent what's happening when we don't get a real good reading on what's going on the facts, on the events. So it's very important also to not let the fear of the fear, you know, stopping us from looking at reality. So that's one message that I would like to give to people. The second is to understand, for example, let's say I realize that I'm feeling fearful or I'm feeling angry and I have the sensations in my stomach. I have a course about that, by the way. I'm only giving it one time this year in LA, on emotion aid. We call it emotion aid, which is emotional first aid, how to learn to discharge our nervous system from stress and trauma on an ongoing basis.
Is that the one in July?
The one in July. The 8th of July is the one that's going to be on emotion aid.
Okay,
and that allows me on the spot, anywhere, everywhere, to just do it.
And we want to make sure we'll let people know later on how to contact you to find out more about that.
Yeah, so
yeah, let's do that.
Well,
so you were bringing
you
up that you were doing that course. I'm sorry, I interrupted. You were bringing up a point. I apologize.
No. You did very well. I'm just going to take the opportunity to give both of the website is actually www.traumainstitute.org, and you can get the information on the workshop there and sign up for it too.
It will probably
be also at Gina Ross too. The other thing is 323-954-1400 is the number to call to register or ask questions or getting more information. So for example, I call it, if I brush my nervous system on a daily basis, if I get it back to homeostasis, it's very likely that I'm going to be pretty rational in my analysis of what's going on. I'm not going to be polarized. I'm not going to demonize. I'm also not going to beat myself up mercilessly, just because that's another way that we remember violence is also aggression is turned towards the self. So either we attack the others or we attack ourselves mercilessly, and then everything that's happening is our fault. And you see that with women in couples. You see that with children that have been traumatized by their parents. You see that in communities. You see that everywhere. in nations also. So that's, again, another discernment that's important for us to look at. So I can now learn how to discharge the stress hormones from my body. Once I do that, I'm much more logical. Then we created another program, a protocol for conflict resolution and communication. It's just wonderful because it bases on what we all have in common. First of all, to heal, everybody has the same nervous system. Thank God, all over the world, wherever you go, people are going to have a sympathetic, parasympathetic branch of their autonomic nervous system that are going to react to the stress hormones in the same way. It doesn't matter what color, what religion, what language you speak, where you're from, we all have that in common. Another thing that we established that we all have in common is our universal basic needs. And in the two other days, on the 10th and the 11th, in the workshop of the 10th and 11th of July, is when we really learn how to use the protocol. It's very sophisticated, but it's also very simple. If you follow the protocol, there is nobody at the end of a session that you will not find a way to understand or talk to after. It opens up the understanding of ourselves and the other person. But you can't do it if your nervous system is charged up. If you're in toxic fear or toxic anger, you can't do it. You can't see, put yourself in the shoe of the other. You can't understand them, and you cannot make yourself understood in a logical way, in a good way. We may impose, we may scream and yell, we may give up, but we're not going to get through. So that's part of how do we work individually to promote a healthy collective nervous system. This is the part that each one of us can do.
Mm. And that's very important. You know, it strikes me that one of the things we don't do as a society, and maybe this is as a world society, I don't know, but I'll certainly deal in the United States, we don't actually teach life skills to children in schools. We teach courses because we act like the courses are what give you the skills for life. And yet, we really don't teach life skills. And this is a life skill you're talking about. One that could actually open up a person's life if they're able to practice it from a young age versus accumulating the trauma and trying to have to go through the process of clearing all that later.
Exactly, exactly. That's why, you know, we have programs in the schools, but I tell you, we even have programs for pregnant mothers. It really starts at the fetal level. A mother that knows how to relax herself when she's upset or fearful is going to strengthen a good, solid autonomic nervous system in her child when they're born. That's why it's so important to really start the earliest possible. But I don't give up on the adults like other people. Adults can also make a lot of changes. Especially the, quote, normal adults, like all the ones that are functioning, all of us that are kind of functioning in life. You know, we're getting married, we're having babies, we're working, we're doing art, we have our own interests. All of those of us, even though we're traumatized or we have traumatic activation, we're still highly functioning. Well, us, these people, can really use emotion aid to truly, truly get their life at the maximum potential.
When you were talking about what you go through in the training earlier, it reminded me of someone who 20 or 30 years ago, this was almost 30 years ago, told me, Solazar, think twice before you say nothing. And because it's so easy for all of us to, as we get charged, to actually process and talk through that charge, and yet that's not a balanced place, it's not a rational place. And chances are it's not going to do anything but escalate the situation.
It'll be a backlash, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And you know something that I have found fascinating? If I'm really traumatized, I don't care if I hurt myself, if I can get to hurt the other.
Yeah, it's
I'm oblivious to the. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yeah, we throw
that
all
my mind away.
Preservation to the wind, if we can just get. And so I have to ask you though. This is a very, I don't know how to say it. It's a very heavy career choice. It's very deep. There's a lot of, you're dealing with a lot of situations of trauma, just dealing with your classes, your clients, and what you're trying to do. How do you manage to allow yourself to clear and maintain your balance?
I'm so glad you're asking, because the one thing that we haven't really introduced completely is what I call the healing vortex. We know about the trauma vortex. We know what it's doing. We're all learning about it. But the miraculous thing that I've learned, I was studying with Dr. Peter Levine, who created somatic experiencing, and this is what I teach also. And he said something that was fascinating. He said, when there's a trauma that happens, and it's a trauma vortex that shapes up, at the same time in the system, there's a healing vortex that's formed to be able to cope with it. In other words, we have a built-in ability to heal. It's an innate ability. We're born with it. The difference is that it gets stuck, and now we have the tools to get it unstuck. But once you're using the tools to get it unstuck, it's there in all of its power. So when I'm sitting with clients and I'm able to help them free the stuck energy, the traumatic energy from their bodies, imagine in what heaven I am. Amazing. My body is breathing with theirs. I'm feeling the healing vortex with them. It's like a gift. You know, I can spend 10 hours working with somatic experiencing and helping people discharge and getting themselves back, and I'm full of energy after I leave the office because of that. So here's the thing. What I never give up is the concept of the healing vortex always being available, in that what we have to do is clear the path for it. Not in a naive way, not in a Pollyannish way. You know, it's more about, I can clear it up when I'm cleaning my nervous system. So I actually use the technique for myself. I actually use the technique with the people around me. And that doesn't mean that we're perfect. I mean, I can be very impatient. Ask my secretary, she can tell you. You know, there's a lot going on. As
oh, you mean
know,
you're
I'm
human. I got it.
Yeah, but I'm not only a human. I'm an intense human. You know, I'm like French and Brazilian and Arab, put it all, and a Jew, put it all together. That's quite a bunch of very excited and excitable people, you know, in there. So, yeah, it's not about being, oh, da la la, only lovey-dovey. It's not that. It's just never going to the point where you become destructive. It's really holding enough back, cleaning enough back. So you can have a good argument, but you know after that, you're going to be fine with the other person. Love and connection will never get disconnected, no matter how angry you are with them. So I always look at that.
As you said, too, when you talked about even appropriate anger, we can get angry at a situation, but if we're not destroying the person, if we're not turning it into an attack, if we're not turning it into an escalation, and if we're being clear in our communication, then the anger itself is appropriate. It's not inappropriate. But what we do tend to do is take our anger, get triggered, turn that into anger, and then direct it at the person and make them the object of the anger. And that's
exactly
the wrong
way. We're confusing. Yeah, we're confusing toxic anger with healthy anger. Actually, most of the movements of repair in the world have come from healthy anger, because people went through very big traumas that they were able to heal. So here is a thought that I want to leave you with that I thought was wonderful that Peter Levine gave us. It was like, heal the trauma is one of the paths for transformation. We have several others, like prayer, meditation. Well, healed trauma is one of the most significant ones, because if you look around the world for the people who have taken initiatives to heal and make a difference in the world, they all had something that they overcame in a magnificent way, and they wanted to share it with the rest of the world. They wanted to make it beneficial for humanity. If you look around, it's very interesting to see. It's not people that had just mild, quiet lives, or people that, you know, something really bad happened, something really jolted them and jolted their lives and hurt them very deeply, and they stayed in the healing vortex, or they moved themselves into the healing vortex by healing their traumas, and they were able then to really do something completely meaningful and transformative in the world.
And it's
so the healing vortex is
one of the things you've touched on is to recognize that we can disagree with people. Disagreeing is healthy. Disagreeing is fine. We don't have to agree. But again, we don't have to turn that into a traumatic event by turning it into attacks. We don't have to turn it into polarity between differing points of views. There are just differing
right.
points of views.
And also not cutting the connection. You know how many people, like very good friends and families, are not talking to each other anymore, or erasing each other from their Facebooks or their emails because they don't agree politically?
Yeah.
I mean, we've gone to a very, very great height of polarization right now. I feel that nobody is holding the center right now.
Yeah, I agree, and I find myself doing that as well. As a matter of fact, I'm tired of intransigent positions without... My issue always has been, I want acknowledgement of what I said, whether you agree with me or not. And when intransigent positions keep coming back, I just get fed up, and I admit, I say, okay, unfriend that person, because we're
right,
not having a discussion.
Exactly.
You know, because I can see your point of view. I'd like you to at least see mine, whether you agree with it or not.
I don't know where you live, but I would like to invite you to come to the workshop, and I'll give you another path for that.
Okay. Oh, you mean
because
I got to come as friend? I don't know.
You have to what? You have to what?
I said, oh, you mean I have to keep them as friends? I don't know about that. But, you know, one thing that you do point out in some of your material, and I don't know and I'm sure you'll touch on in the workshop, it's also important for us to not allow ourselves to get in a position of feeling isolated or separated from others. It's important for us to have some socialization, some connection with people. It doesn't have to be big, but something, so that we don't get that sense of isolation. It's so much easier than to go internal and stay there and allow our trauma to take over.
You're completely correct about that. What trauma does, it cuts us off from our resources. That's the name of this game. So if we're isolated, if we see somebody isolated, or if we see somebody in a fight or flight response that's ongoing, this is how they respond to everything, you know that they're traumatized. So you've got the fight response, the flight response, and the freeze response as patterns of reacting to everything that's going on with them.
Mm.
That's when we know that something is going on. So it's good to open the eyes and to destigmatize trauma, to really understand it's really just about excess energy stuck in the body, and we can discharge it. We have the tools available. There are many of them now. It's amazing how much we have done in the last 20 years in terms of the trauma healing field.
So we want to remind folks that we've been talking with Gina Ross, founder and president of the International Trauma Healing Institutes, in both the United States and Israel, and co-founder of the Israeli Trauma Center at Herzog's Hospital in Jerusalem. And you mentioned, Gina, also about the upcoming workshop. Could you give us more of the details of that coming up in July?
So the Friday 8th of July is going to be about emotion aid, and it's from 9 to 5, more or less, with a lunch break and a couple of small breaks. And what you learn is how to brush your nervous system on the spot, anywhere, everywhere, anytime. And you don't need paper, you don't need machines, you don't need even an isolated place. You can do it in the middle of the crowd, you can do it in the middle, on the bus, wherever you are. It's really amazing. You can learn to discharge your nervous system from any of the difficult emotions that come over. That's the Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The Sunday 10th and Monday 11th is the conflict resolution communication workshop. It also talks about collective trauma, how to recognize its features, how to deal with it. But also it's like it's a protocol that you receive. Let's say you have somebody, you have a conflict with somebody. Either you can't stand them or you're really upset about what they're doing to you and you just don't get it. By going through the protocol, which also uses emotion aid, which is why we combine the two, you cannot look at it if your nervous system is in ebullience, okay? So by also doing emotion aid, you are then able to, by following this protocol, to really understand how did they upset you? What are your basic needs that got compromised? And what are their own universal basic needs that they're attempting to fulfill, but in the wrong way? And once you get that, there's a whole different way of communicating. You also learn what it means to communicate from the trauma vortex, which means that you for sure are going to invite backlash and bad relationships, or to speak from the healing vortex, which opens up the other person to hear what you have to say and to understand what your needs are. So basically, and it's also again from 9 to 5, basically this is what the workshops are about. You can take the first workshop by itself, but you have to take the first one if you want to do the two other days.
Okay, and you said on the traumainstitute.org, people can find out more about this event?
Traumainstitute.org. They can also get in touch with us at info@traumainstitute.org.
Okay. And so we want to encourage...
And 323-954-1400 for information and to sign up.
Okay, we did add the traumainstitute.org to the Good Vibrations guest page also, so people can go there and get the links to both GinaRoss.com and traumainstitute.org. They can also obtain your booklets through that website also, and you've got quite
right.
a variety
yeah.
between for clergy, for medical professionals, for education and psychology mm-hmm. professionals, military, diplomats and NGOs, as well as the media and the general public. And you also have a Hebrew version for the general public as well, for those who are interested.
And a Portuguese version, too.
Oh, okay. So, Gina, are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with the listeners before we break away?
Well, I just wanted to tell you it was a real pleasure talking to you and listening to your talk before we started the conversation.
Thank you.
I think the work that you're doing is what I call the vortex work.
Huh.
So one of the things that I would like to create, actually there are a couple of places like that, is some global website where everything that's coming from the healing vortex gets recorded. Because what that does, it actually seeds the collective consciousness with the right behavior, the right way of thinking, the easy way of interacting with the world. It's what you call how to be present to ourselves and to the world by being able to connect with what's already working, not only with what's negative. So I just wanted to share that when you were talking, I was smiling a lot and thinking, oh, okay, he's up my alley completely.
We want to remind folks that Good Vibrations Radio will be back tomorrow at 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific and also on Thursday. I want to thank you for listening. Turn the lead in your life into gold and many blessings.
Gotta keep those loved ones, vibrations are happening with